Positive Outcomes, a podcast for the P&O community. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Simon Beals, your host for this episode. We have a fantastic show for you today. Brian Dunphy from ACOR is joining us, and today's topic is how the right materials make the best outcomes. So ACOR Orthopedic was founded in 1972 as a patient care facility, is now a manufacturer, converter, and distributor of EVA, polyethylene, and polyurethane foam products, serving a variety of markets worldwide. So we're being joined by Brian Dunphy, who joined ACOR Orthopedic in 2018 as an account manager after several years as a certified podorthist and outreach medical marketing coordinator for a large locally owned footwear retailer. Podorthic Center. Having worked in the field, Brian's unique understanding of materials fabrication processes gave him an insight into how ACOR materials would be best used and how the ACOR brands would be best represented. In 2019, he transitioned out of sales and is currently the marketing and communications director at ACOR. Welcome, Brian. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us today.
Hi, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So let's start with some of the basics. There's so much we could talk about with respect to materials. Over the years, kind of starting at Orthoped, one of the things that I learned is that practitioners are passionate and kind of almost territorial about their materials and their choice of materials for their various devices that they fabricate. I've had the privilege of spending kind of quite a bit of time in a huge number of clinics from coast to coast here in Canada, which I consider to be quite a privilege. And although we're kind of treating the same anatomical structure, the composition and fabrication of everybody's orthotics seems to be massively different. Have you observed that in your experience?
Absolutely. It's kind of the old saying, there's more than one way to skin a cat. And I certainly recognize that we have a number of end users that are taking the products that we sell in their, what they would consider their raw form, sheet form, roll form, and building, in some cases, drastically different devices to treat similar or the same pathologies. And it's interesting that there are positive outcomes, to borrow from the theme of the podcast here. There are positive outcomes from several different avenues. So that to me is exciting. And I agree with you. It's a privilege to work with some of the, I think, the smartest people and organizations that are out doing this stuff.
So, I mean, we could talk actual kind of, you know, material science all day, but I want to kind of, you know, steer around some of those elements. We'll definitely talk about it. But in your opinion, how important is it to use the right materials when you're fabricating an orthotic device?
Well, I think it's very important. You know, coming from a world where I was working daily in a lab and fabricating foot orthotics myself, and I have sort of a unique perspective on that. But, you know, orthotic devices, foot orthotics in particular, are for the most part structural. There are some, of course, that are considered to be accommodative, but most orthotics are designed to deliver some kind of support or corrective assistance. So choosing the right material to deliver the intended support is pretty vital to the intended outcome. And I've had people, you know, at trade shows in the past, I've had different potential customers ask a question similar to this. And I sort of came up with an analogy that I think works, which is, you know, I can't imagine an engineer overseeing the design and construction of a bridge that he or she knows people are going to drive over every day, and just kind of having the attitude that any old concrete will do. You know, any PSI, any quality or method of installation is fine because concrete's concrete. You know, it kind of doesn't matter. Well, we know that's not true. And of course, the same could be said about orthotic construction. Structural foundations are only as good as the materials that they're made of. So, you know, we approach the material science and at least the explanation of why it's important to choose the right materials from that angle. That, you know, we're trying to provide you with something that's it's going to hold up your bridge all day.
Okay. That's kind of a good way to look at it. I've had this conversation with all sorts of clinicians, prosthetists, orthotists, and I've asked them. So a patient comes in and they present with a certain type of complaint. Do you see kind of their device? And I asked them this: do you see the device pre-finished and then work backwards, or do you look at how they present and break down kind of each level or kind of element that you would then need to incorporate into their your device? So, you know, if you think about it along the terms of an AFO or a prosthetic limb. And it's funny, I've probably had a 50-50 mix of, you know, the patient comes in, I understand what the problem is, I see the end product, and then I go backwards, and others will take it from the first step. Okay, you know, first step, they need to do this. How are we going to accomplish that? How do you, or how have you approached the creation of an orthotic, a foot orthotic device kind of in practice, and also kind of as your role of being kind of the purveyors of all of these different materials?
When I was fabricating devices myself, I got some really great advice from a pretty well-known podorthist. Well, he's not a podorthist. He's an orthotist prosthetist. Although he may have the Bedorthus tag too, I don't really remember. But Roger Marzano was somebody that I shadowed. He mentored me as I was getting my licensure. And I actually got this advice from him on a golf course. Is he said an approach that works for him that I then used was to reverse engineer the golf shot. So you kind of envision what the outcome is. You know what your best shot looks like to get the desired outcome. And then you work it backwards from there. So for instance, for a foot orthotic, if somebody presents with, you know, posterior tibial tendon dysfunction, I know what I want their foot to look like posturally inside a shoe. I know what possibly the most comfortable way to get from heel to toe in the gait cycle would be for that patient. And then I have to start working backwards from that and figure out and then work my way into an orthotic from there that will hopefully help that patient function properly. And so in recommending materials and in the sales of materials, we tend to be a part of that process where, especially in cases where clinicians are developing new products or perhaps dealing with a particularly difficult pathology, they may call and ask for advice on which type of material would provide this portion of support within this part of the orthotic. And then we can start to talk material science and maybe help them understand how a higher or lower durometer might serve that function better. So it's a little different for me now because I talk more about serving the purpose of the orthotic, trusting that the clinician has the outcome in mind. So, but it's very similar. You kind of work backwards from what we know the intended outcome is and then arrive at the base, which is the material recommendation.
Okay. Now, do you go from the base of the orthotic up or do you go from the top cover down?
You know, we tend to let the clinician steer the ship when it goes that way. Back when I was fabricating, I would use my own method, and you know, for a hyper flexible foot, I would work from the ground up, and for a high arch, you know, super rigid foot, I would work from the foot down. But our customers and the clinicians we deal with in fabrication, they all have a different method. And kind of to your first point, there are so many different ways to approach the fabrication of a really good foot orthotic that we tend to do more listening than we do instructing. And then try to help guide and, you know, guide those questions to the best answer.
Right. Now, from my experience, I mean, oftentimes, whether it be clinicians or technicians, any type of practitioner, they have, I'll call it a bread and butter recipe for fabrication. So, you know, the patient that falls into this category, we're going to make this orthotic. Somebody that comes in is in this category, a diabetic, for example, we're going to make this type of device. Is that a common kind of occurrence that you've seen through your experience that kind of people fall back into, or, you know, just find, you know, a configuration that works for them, that they're comfortable with, and then just will repeat that?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, there's everybody has their favorites, and it seems like you're right. They're kind of grouped into categories, so everybody will kind of treat the same patient population that's presenting with the same pathology with at least the same base, and then in sort of reference to what we just talked about, they'll look for specifics within that patient to make modifications to the orthotic to personalize it. But yeah, for sure, everybody has their bread and butter, as you called it. What's really fun and what's really interesting is to watch how they can take those bread and butter devices and customize them, you know, to make them more individual to the patient.
Does anything kind of stand out in your mind where kind of exactly that has been done, where kind of you've started with this and then that kind of customization element has factored in?
Well, yeah, I'll go back to, because there are examples of this with current customers, but I'll go back to an example from my own time in fabrication, which was I had a patient come in that was admittedly difficult. You know, he's one of these people that comes in and says, "You're going to have a hard time dealing with me."
And well, that's nice that they at least gave you the heads up.
Supposed
to find out on your own.
Right. Yeah, you wish you got that kind of warning from people just in general. But no, this guy was very specific. He said, "You're going to have a hard time dealing with me. I'm never comfortable. My feet always hurt. And this is my diagnosis, and the doc wants me to get custom foot orthotics." And I said, okay. So we did the bread and butter, three-layer, semi-rigid foot orthotic, custom molded and pulled over a plaster cast. He wore them for about a week. He did, you know, use the break-in instructions just like I told him to. And he came back and said, "I hate them. Can't stand them. I don't like them. They don't fit my most of the shoes that I have, and they're just not helping me with my comfort." I said, okay. So we did some modifications. About a week goes by and he comes back and he says, "I hate them more." I said, okay. So we did some.
I'm laughing right now because every single listener is saying, "I have that patient. That patient has come to my office."
Sure. And I would suspect that most people listening in this situation have not shied away from that and accepted that challenge and said, "This is the one I'm going to figure out right now." And so he came back a third time. And this time he said, "Way better, way better." And I said, "Okay, what do you think worked?" And he goes, "Let me show you." And he pulls the orthotics out of his shoes and he used every cotton ball and wadded up, you know, painter's tape and just little pieces of packing foam that he cut off of something that he bought. And he did his own thing, whatever you want to call it. And he said, "If you can make the orthotic this shape with what you have here, I think we may have a success on our hands." So I took every measurement and recreated his Frankenstein pair in a, you know, with durable materials that were going to hold up over time. And I only saw him one other time, and that was in a restaurant. And he introduced me to his wife, and he said, "This is the guy that fixed my feet." So
nice.
So there's, you know, that's an example of the bread and butter device getting just absolutely torn apart and recreated. And the truth is, the next person that came in that said, "I'm a difficult case," we started with the bread and butter still. So.
So what would you say then would be kind of an approach that somebody could take that, you know, currently has their bread and butter, but now they want to expand or explore different materials? Because I think likely, I mean, as you were, you're mentored by an individual or maybe a series of individuals, and you learn from them and probably adopt and begin using kind of what you're shown first. And for some, they may continue to do that moving forward. You know, you're exposed then to somebody else's device, somebody else's thinking, you know, adapt a bit of this, a bit of that, and you morph it into your own arsenal and repertoire. Sure. of tools for approaching patient management. For somebody that, you know, is looking to explore, you know, what other materials are out there, how could they approach this?
That's a great question, because obviously we've learned a few things over the past year about, you know, what it takes to reach out to get new materials in front of people. You know, for the most part, we didn't see anybody at trade shows last year. And typically in O&P, I think technicians and clinicians are out looking for new materials and new methods on the trade show floor and networking there to get ideas, and then taking their ideas and trying to source up materials that'll fit the mode, you know, the modality of what they want to do. And so I, you know, when we're not out in front of people displaying our materials and talking about all of the metrics, you know, durometer and density and rebound and tensile strength and all of those fun things, you know, we end up fielding a lot more phone calls. We try to initiate some of the conversations and you know, find out what people are working on, what they're interested in. My advice is don't be shy about asking for data. Don't be shy about asking for samples, because there's only one way to find out. And, you know, if a material is going to work for you, we can regurgitate the data all day long. And we have nice, pretty sell sheets and catalogs that go out. But until you can feel the material underfoot, understand how it functions within your device, you know, it's hard to make that determination. I think my biggest piece of advice is don't be afraid to pick up the phone and don't be afraid to ask for a sample, ask for an opinion. You probably agree with me. Everybody in this industry is opinionated, so you get a lot of opinions. But we'll help you do the homework, and we'll certainly help with samples and recommendations. So I to go about finding new materials for new projects, just kind of be an open book. Ask good questions, take advice, and evaluate samples, and you'll eventually end up where you need to be, I think.
And I've always said that our listening audience, everybody that's listening to this that has an interest in this topic, is tactile. All about touching. I mean, I've said this joke more than once that, you know, pre-pandemic, you know, I stopped having meetings with clinicians at Starbucks because I bring out materials and they're sniffing the EVA and squeezing and pinching and stretching. And it's very upsetting to the other patrons in Starbucks when, you know, you're doing things like that. But I don't think there's a substitute for actually having that hands-on with the material. I mean, how it works, how it stretches, how it heats, how it molds, how it cuts, how it finishes, all of those elements, I think, are part of the craftsmanship that goes into making a final device. And I don't think there's a substitute for, you know, that hands-on doing.
I absolutely agree. Yeah, absolutely right.
Technology, you know, certainly kind of, you know, we've all learned to use it in the last year up and beyond what we ever thought we might. Mm-hmm. Speak to me about how technology is changing with respect to foot orthotics and material selections and options that are available as technology evolves and, you know, changes the industry.
Yeah, well, as technology evolves, you know, I see customers more and more moving towards, if not full automation, at least more efficient practices in their labs. And what's interesting from the supplier side is the way the technology advances, but some of the habits remain the same. So what I mean by that is the ordering habits might stay the same regardless of how the technology advances. And of course, I think more people are milling positives these days instead of pouring plaster. And there are, you know, obviously plenty of places with milling negatives going directly to the orthotic. There's 3D printing, which we don't really dabble in the supply of products for the 3D printed market, other than supplying top covers. But it's interesting to me that there's technology from a supplier standpoint has put a load of information at arm's reach. And regardless of how much information is out there, kind of like we just talked about, the ordering methods or the methods for sampling and checking and to make sure the materials work for the intended purpose haven't changed. So, you know, if I have a customer that's, you know, 500 miles away, they can read all about our product. They can download all of the sell sheets and data guides and all of those things. That doesn't necessarily help them make the decision because, like you said, it's a tactile thing. You know, they need to feel it between their fingers. And a lot of them, you know, have acknowledged that how it squishes between your fingers is different than how it feels underfoot. So I think that the technology, you know, of course, is advancing rapidly in the production of the orthotics and prosthetics. But I think the human element, which is that tactile, the decision making on what goes into that fabrication process as far as materials are concerned, I don't know that that is changing as rapidly with the technology. And I think that's probably the right thing. You know, I think that, you know, it's kind of like your computer hardware is one thing, but having the software to run it is another thing. and then having the user that understands how to manipulate the software to get the hardware to do what it's supposed to do. That's sort of the umbrella. And I feel like you can advance your hardware, you can advance your software, but the operator needs to still have a grasp of the basics. And coming back to fabrication, that would be, how does this feel underfoot? You know, how do I evaluate it in the lab before I employ the technology on it?
So with these changes, I mean, has that changed how Acor as a supplier of materials kind of looks for new product offering and new materials? Does some of this technology direct you in terms of your sourcing and finding, you know, new product and new options that you can then bring to the market?
Well, sort of. What's something new? I think I just read this the other day. Is something that's new that is kind of changing the way we think about the way our products are presented to potential customers and things like that. Is 65% of all internet searches are now starting, or they're originating on shopping websites. So 65% of people that go to look for information on something, this is not necessarily to buy something, looking for information on something, are going to Amazon before they go to Google. And that's changed a little bit the way we think about our presentation of the products that we are sourcing. And it helps us, it helps guide us into what is top of mind for people that are outsourcing new products. So for instance, earlier this year, we launched a product called Ecotex. And we've launched EchoCell, and we're spending more time during sourcing and before product launch, getting an understanding of what the market is asking for. And technology is absolutely helping us do that. And once we get a grasp on those things, then we can get a better understanding by doing user experience studies, you know, specifically what the needs are. We've gone so far as to even survey our customers for naming. You know, when we launch a new product, we ask a random group of labs, you know, we've narrowed the name down to these three things. What do you think? What does it mean to you? And so being more engaged with a customer base that is and a potential customer base that's out there, you know, absorbing information from websites like Amazon is helpful, because we have the hard data we get online, but then we have the softer, more meaningful data that we get from personal interaction. So we're sourcing and developing things now that probably 3 or 4 years ago would have never crossed anybody's minds here at Acor, because we just didn't know that there was a need for it.
Interesting. Can you give us an example of something like that, where kind of, you know, you've sought feedback from your customers, so our listeners, you know, they've provided that, and you've kind of gone out searching for an answer to that question. You know, sure. Like, you know, the you know, ultra thin, ultra durable, you know, sweat resistant, odor resistant. I mean, just every factor that's normally kind of goes into, you know, a person's request. Can you tell us about one of those, and then kind of what you've brought back and introduced to us that's kind of answered, you know, that particular need?
Sure. Well, some of it is driven by industry needs, you know, in the larger picture. Some of it is driven more by specific needs that the industry is asking for that are, let's say, on trend. So for instance, we had an understanding for some time that leather, which a lot of labs still use as top covers or wraps for AFO devices, top covers for foot orthotics, that the price of leather was soon going to skyrocket. We were told by several suppliers, and we were hearing, you know, the same thing from friends in the industry. And at the same time, there's, you know, if you look at the chatter online and understand what people are searching for online, there was a demand for a more responsible leather replacement. Something that would behave like leather and look and feel like leather, but wasn't going to be as expensive, and also was more responsible, you know, didn't have the byproducts that were harmful to the environment, so eco-friendly. And so we went for the first time out to our supplier partners, our manufacturing partners, and started to look for and try to develop top cover and an upper wrap that could be a suitable replacement for leather that was going to be cost efficient and eco-friendly. And so we ended up doing a marketing study with a group of labs and a UX study, a user experience study, to refine some of those questions that we had and find out, really drill down to what was most important. And so from the supplier point of view, we assumed that our customers would be most responsive to the talk about price. We assumed that when we were outsourcing, we needed to be looking for something that was a considerable savings over leather, because leather is known for its durability. It's one of those old standards. Like we said, old habits die hard. What we found, though, in our marketing study and in our user experience study, is that the cost of the product fell way down the priority list. And consideration number one was durability. And consideration number two, at a very close second, was the product's eco-friendly aspect. None of us here expected that answer. Nobody expected, and we did a large survey. Nobody here expected, an entire industry to say, yeah, we don't want our products to harm the environment. We've been using leather for so long in this industry, and we were all just absolutely shocked by that. Pleasantly so, And so then we went back and reformulated some of our requests, did some more testing, and we were able to come back with two products, one specifically for top covers, FabriFit, one specifically for wraps on AFOs and KAFOs that they replicate leather in a way that when you finish the device, you could give it to 10 people and 9 of them would not know it's not leather, but they're eco-friendly, they're recyclable, there are no carbon byproducts in the manufacturing of the products, they're free of chromium 6. I mean, they just check all the boxes, and they're less expensive than traditional leather. So that was one way that we sort of took what we learned just from industry data and maybe a few comments here and there at trade shows and went, maybe we should look into this. And that's turned out to be a success for us. And the other one...
Before you go on, could you speak a little bit more about FabriFit? Is there maybe some of our listeners that are new to FabriFit and they're... it's a new product for them.
Sure.
Could you kind of talk a little bit about FabriFit?
So FabriFit is, for anybody that's using a leather or a leather-like top cover on foot orthotics or to line their, anything that contacts the skin, their AFOs, FabriFit is a suitable leather replacement that is antibacterial, antimicrobial. It's 100% breathable. It moves moisture at a rate more rapid than leather does, which means it will wick moisture away from your skin or through your sock at a higher rate than leather does. It creates a healthier environment inside a shoe. It's available in 40 colors, so you can really customize your device. And there is a semi-perforated version for more athletic applications when you really need to move moisture. But again, it's eco-friendly. It's a microfiber. It looks and feels like leather, but it's very thin. It's ideal for top covers because it doesn't hog up a whole lot of room inside a shoe. And it's friendly to the environment.
Stretch?
Four-way stretch on FabriFit, so it molds nicely into a heel cup. Or over the top of modified structures on the top surface of a foot orthotic. So yeah, it's ideal for custom orthotic fabrication.
I know that we currently carry it in black, but I also know that there's kind of a rainbow of colors available, both perforated and non-perforated, correct?
Right, that's correct.
The other big certainly been an important element for us and will be as we move forward is the introduction that was made of EcoCell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you speak to us about EcoCell?
So that's another interesting journey for, listening to what the industry needs and then finding something that works. This pandemic year that we went through, I think we all learned a lot, and the effect that the pandemic had on the global supply chain meant that some of the industry standard polyurethanes were scarce. For a number of different reasons, but shipping from their countries of origin was, or at least the raw materials from the countries of origin were, I think that was the number one reason. So understanding that there was, we were getting phone calls daily from not only from customers, but from distributors too, asking for an alternative. So we set out to find an alternative, but we went out with a specific mission, which was to find something that was cost effective. But we had an 8-point check system that this new product, whatever it ended up being after development, needed to be equal to or better than what we would consider an industry standard, you know, medical grade urethane. So we went through a series, you know, a round of lab testing on a group of materials for density, compression, deflection, compression set. Forgive me if I don't remember them all. 25% CFD, which is how much force does it take to compress a material to 25% its original size, tensile strength, elongation, tear strength. I'm missing one. Resilience, I think, is one. So once we had a product that checked all those boxes and we knew wasn't going to be an inferior product to what needed replaced, okay, we can put a check mark in that box and move that aside. Next, we move on to cytotoxicity, skin irritation, things like that. How is this product going to react in a setting where somebody has to put it against their skin for 8 hours a day? So then those boxes are checked. And then we just move on to the fun stuff, which is what colors do we want to carry it in? You know, can we tweak the colors a little bit to make them look unique from what else is out there? And, you know, how do we make the product look its best? So go through all those things and come up with a nice name and a logo, which is EcoCell Pro and EcoCell High Rebound. And that's been a great success. It, luckily for us, we were able to get that product through development and out to customers at a time when the polyurethane shortage in the industry in general is pretty well known at this point. So it's been a great substitute, you know, for that kind of gap in the industry.
It's certainly something that we appreciated that Acor had the foresight and took a very proactive role in kind of seeing what was or what may happen down the road. And I mean, all of this takes time, obviously, to develop and to kind of have started that process early enough that we didn't get an interruption or a pause in the availability of raw materials and finished, you know, product that they can go out to clinicians so that they're able to maintain their businesses. There's been enough difficulty with logistics and supply chain as a result of the pandemic globally. And it's really made people think, you know, what if, you know, product X becomes unavailable? How are we going to manage? We had the element in the prosthetic side of things that, you know, all of the barriers, plastic and so forth, that were being brought in and put up in places of business is the same material that we use to fabricate check sockets. And all of a sudden, that material was either unavailable or, if it was available, was astronomically priced. And it raises the question, oh my gosh, what if all of a sudden that product is no longer available? The same thing, you know, when you get something as fundamental, you know, as a padding layer in a foot orthotic, if that layer is no longer available, you know, what substitutions would need to be made, or how are we going to make an accommodative device and work around it? So, you know, thank you for kind of looking at that and, you know, helping us to avoid what could have been a very serious deficiency within the marketplace. You spoke about the EcoCell, you spoke about EcoCell Pro and the High Rebound. Can you explain kind of the difference between the two products?
Sure. So the EcoCell Professional is really a substitute for what we would just consider industry standard polyurethanes that, like I said, exceeds, you know, checks all the boxes. It equals or exceeds the lab testing for what's been traditionally the industry's cushioning layer in foot orthotics. It passes the cytotoxicity testing. It passes the skin irritation testing. So it runs right alongside that medical urethane category at a price that's affordable without crazy minimums, you know, for purchasing, short lead times, and it outperforms the traditional urethane. So we're very proud of that. That's EcoCell Professional.
And before you go on, the variants that you have for Professional Series in terms of thicknesses, scrimmed, non-scrimmed.
Yeah, we have gone through and done a one-to-one replacement for everything that we offered in our traditional urethane. So we have fabric covered EcoCell. which can be used as a top cover. So the cushioning layer is very close to the foot. We have scrim covered. It's being used in all of our laminations. So custom laminations, you know, where it's a two or three layer, it's being used for the fabrication of a foot orthotic. It's in there. It's this product, in my opinion, is also, there is less consideration and in some cases unnecessary consideration that needs to go into it when you're using it, because this product comes double-sided braided only. And if you were to survey, because we've done this, if you were to survey 20 technicians and ask them why they prefer one side abraded, one side not abraded, or two sides unabraded, they can't answer the question. It's one of those old traditions again, where, well, I've always been using a 1AB product. But the truth is that EchoCell in a 2AB offering adheres better when it's glued, and there's just less, you don't have to flip it over and make sure you're using the right side and everything like that. It's a simplified version in that sense. So, but yeah, all the variations are available, and it is available in laminations as well. Excellent. And then onto the high rebound then is, high rebound is something, and I know you're seeing a lot of it up there being asked for and being used, is a version of the same product, EchoCell, that ratchets up the numbers a little bit on compression deflection, on CFD, on tensile strength, and resilience, so that you get more of a bounce out of the material. It's a great shock absorber, but it's also great for energizing from heel strike to toe off, you know, in that midfoot part of the gait cycle, to have something that gives you a little bit of a reaction. So a lot of labs are really looking for polyurethanes with a higher rebound. And so our answer for that is EchoCell high rebound. And it's done well so far for us too.
Excellent. Brian, a wealth of information. Thank you so much for just scraping just the top surface. Over the past few years, OrthoPed has been working more and more closely with Acor. We like to consider ourselves the Canadian warehouse for Acor. But something I really like all of our listening audience to know is that Acor is a wealth of information and is just an outstanding resource for you. So should you have questions or, things in terms of methods for fabrication, what glues to what isn't going to glue with what works in combination, the techs of heating temperatures, working times, all of those elements. If you have specifications, we've spoken a lot today about sheet materials, but EVAs and going into blockers and custom blockers, whether they be flat, skived, single durometer, multi-durometer, if there's something that, works for you that you've developed, we're able to work with Acor to facilitate kind of all of these devices in terms of thicknesses and so forth. So I'd like everybody to really know that Acor is there and is available to be a resource for yourselves and for us as well, to answer those questions and to kind of, solve problems that you may be having and offer solutions that maybe somebody else has come up with or that they've developed.
Yeah, I appreciate all those kind words. And at the end of the day, hopefully that's what we're here for. And that's the way our message comes across. Our primary concern, we talk about this at least once a week. Our primary concern is that once the material is where it's going to be and it's used in the way that it's intended to be used, what we hope for is just the best outcome possible for the patient. And so we kind of use that philosophy that the technician's working for the patient and the clinician is working for the technician. And, the supplier is working for the clinician and we're working for the supplier. And so we feel like the more we can be involved in thought leadership and answering important questions to maybe what you might think is a mundane question, we want to be a partner. And we certainly appreciate OrthoPed reciprocally in the same way, that we just think it's a great partnership and we feel like we're making big strides together.
Ryan, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today. And with that, I'd also like to thank our audience for listening to this episode. Of course, if you have a show or a topic for future episodes or an idea, you can email us at positiveoutcomes@orthoped.ca. New episodes are released every other Thursday at positiveoutcomes.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Positive Outcomes is a production of Orthoped ULC in conjunction with our partners, produced by Jonathan Stone and Frederic Sauvé, and is hosted by myself, Simon Beals, and Jeff Newell. Thanks again for listening. Thank you, Brian. Until next time.